floor is yours.
Thank you for the introduction. Good afternoon, everyone. So I'm going to talk about propagation of cracks under fatigue loading, and I will show a comparison of crack propagation in cross-ply laminates, which means intralaminar crack propagation of a transverse crack, and interlaminar crack propagation in DCB specimens. So starting with a bit of background, some of you may know that in recent years we have developed a model to predict the crack density evolution in multidirectional laminates under cyclic loadings, which means predicting multiple crack initiation and propagation to obtain as what we call the weighted crack density evolution. The weighted crack density is just the sum of the length of all the cracks in an off-axis ply divided by the observation area. So to do this, which is also useful for the stiffness evaluation during the fatigue life of a laminate, we need to predict initiation and propagation of off-axis cracks. In this presentation, I will focus on the propagation. Talking about this, we have the tunneling cracks in laminates propagate in steady state conditions, which means that the energy release rate is not dependent on the crack length, for most of the propagation at least. It actually depends on the distance between the crack front or crack tip and neighboring cracks, because there is a shielding effect due to the presence of neighboring cracks. And to predict the propagation, we use a power law relationship. Does it work, the pointer? No? Anyway, a power law relationship between the energy release rate and the crack grow rate. This, this relationship is obtained by measuring the crack propagation in laminates, for example, cross-ply laminates or also with off-axis plies, and correlating to the energy release rate. This procedure is, say, a bit tricky, even for transparent material systems, because we need to measure the cracks in the laminates from pictures and correlate to the energy release rate. It's even more difficult for non-transparent material systems. So the objective of this analysis is to answer this question. Is it possible to use a more standard and easier type of test, like the DCB test, for characterizing the correlation between the crack grow rate and the energy release rate, to be used also for predicting the propagation of tunneling cracks, off-axis cracks? At the beginning, we were actually confident that the answer is yes. We will see in the end that it's not so clear, so I will end with some question marks. But the reason why we believed that the answer was yes is that basically, from the physical point of view, the phenomenon of the intralaminar and interlaminar crack propagation is very similar. In any case, it is a crack propagating between the fibers on a plane that is parallel to the fibers, basically. So what we did is two kinds of tests made on glass epoxy laminates produced by Infusion. First tests were done on cross-ply laminates with a backlight to acquire periodical images of the damage evolution, something like this. Then we did some image processing to obtain the position of all the cracks and the length of all the cracks. We used different load levels with a load ratio of 0.05. And also we produced unidirectional laminates with exactly the same materials with a pre-crack, with an aluminum sheet, for doing DCB tests. We obtained during the test some images, also here with some manipulation of the images, filtering and subtraction, we had a clear evaluation of the crack front for measuring the crack length. And what we did for the DCB test is constant energy release rate tests. So starting with the cross-ply laminates, from the images we could measure all the cracks, and for all of them calculating the crack propagation rate and correlate it to the energy release rate, the steady state energy release rate calculated with a simple shear leg model validated with finite element analysis. And this is the result. So each of these points in the figure is one propagating crack with a constant growth rate, because it's in a steady state condition. So this is these results are from a lot of cracks in the specimens at different load levels. So moving directly to the DCB tests, we did constant energy release rate tests, but we need to clarify a little bit what this means. In the presence of large scale fiber bridging that we will have in the test, we can always use this relationship based on the compliance derivative with respect to the crack length for determining the energy release rate, but it is not, this is equal to a sum of two contributions. One is correlated to the crack tip advance, and one is correlated to the energy dissipation in the bridging ligaments. What we are keeping constant during the test is the total contribution that we can control with, by controlling and modulating the displacement of the machine, as I will show in a while. So we used a compliance calibration approach. First, we did some preliminary tests to obtain a relationship between the compliance and the crack length, which is a power law relationship with an exponent n equal to about 2.7. From this expression, we can obtain a relationship to calculate the G1 based on the applied displacement, U, and the compliance of the specimens that can be measured during the test. So this is the procedure. At the beginning, we know which is the G1 value that we want to apply. We know the specimen geometry, which means the crack length, the thickness, the width, and so on. Based on the formulation I've shown before, we calculate the initial displacement to be applied for obtaining that particular G1 maximum value. Then we apply some cycles in displacement control up to this displacement value, U0. Then we, at the end, we measure the compliance as the slope of the U versus displacements versus load data. Based on the compliance measured, which is measured automatically by the machine software, then we recalculate the displacement based on the new compliance, then apply again another number of cycles and do this loop until we reach the desired number of cycles. In this way, we could keep the energy release rate, I would say, fairly constant during the entire test. Maybe there is some deviation with respect to the desired value, but the important thing is that the energy release rate is constant. The reason why we wanted to keep it constant is to mimic the steady state crack propagation in the tunneling cracks, which occurs in a steady state, so with a constant energy release rate. So going to the results in terms of the crack growth rate measuring during the test, after the test, basically based on the image analysis, we can see basically four regions of crack propagation. We have an initial peak corresponding to the initial propagation from the starter. Then a region where the crack growth rate was fairly constant. Then a decreasing trend and a final plateau. The decreasing trend is, of course, associated to the presence of large-scale fiber bridging that was observed in the specimens, which is not expected in cross-ply laminates due to the small opening of the cracks, of the tunneling cracks. So the results that we should use for comparing with the cross-ply laminates are those in the initial part where the fiber bridging is not that developed. There is some, but is not a large-scale phenomenon as with longer cracks. So if we compare the curve for the cross-ply laminate and the DCB specimens, this is the result. So not as expected. The good thing is that the slope seems compatible, at least, which probably indicates that the propagation mechanisms, the phenomenon from the physical point of view, qualitatively is the same. Similar to what we have done in the past in an old work comparing the crack initiation and propagation under internal and external multiaxial fatigue loading. But unfortunately, we have quite different positions and a lower growth rate in the DCB samples. The reason can be different, can be a different constraint effect in the cross-ply and in the DCB. The calculation method for the energy release rate, analytical for the cross-ply laminates or finite element, which give the same results, and experimental for the DCB. The energy release rate variation along the crack front, which is different in the cross-ply and in the DCB specimens. So this is still an open question, and we are currently working on this. Just to be sure of the results, we have done the same experimental campaign with another material, with autoclave molded laminates, always with glass fibers, and the results are basically the same. So I think it's consistent. So to conclude, we have developed a procedure for constant energy release rate DCB testing, but the crack row rate versus energy release rate curves were fairly parallel, but with a different position, and this should be investigated. I hope to clarify this point in one of the future occasions for meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. We have time for one or two questions.
I'm just wondering about the effect of residual stresses in the cross-ply.
They should not be, because the infused laminates were cured at room temperature, and post-cure after 3 days, post-cure at 60 degrees in an oven. So there should not be many thermal residual stresses. For the autoclave molded laminates, we have calculated them and included them in the calculation of the energy release rate.
Thank you for your presentation. Just a question. When you made the DCB test, how was oriented the fiber regarding the crack propagation?
Sorry, the orientation of the fibers?
Yes.
Yeah, it was 0 degrees, which means along the axis, the longitudinal axis of the specimen.
Thank you.
All zero.
So it was a classical DCB test?
Yes, exactly.
A short last question? No?
Thanks for a very nice presentation. So can you elaborate a little bit about how you actually obtain a steady state, constant energy release rate for the DCB specimen?
Because
I mean that you, since it's force loaded, you will have that the curvature is changing, right? So from one crack step to another, does all the material points experience the same when the crack grows?
No, it's the cycles are displacement controlled, and we modulate the displacement, the maximum displacement of the cycle, so that based on the compliance measured automatically during the test, we obtain a fairly constant G value. So this ensures that we are in the same condition initially, when we don't have a lot of fiber bridging, as in the cross-ply laminate, where G, the energy release rate, does not vary during the crack propagation. I don't know if it's clear. I can go in more details of the procedure in another occasion, maybe separately later if you
Thanks want. A lot. Let's talk later.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.